Man number 7, daily prayer and protection. Mary Baker Eddy, the discoverer, founder, and leader of Christian Science, pointed out in a number of different ways and places the importance of daily study. Now, by this is not just meant specified time in the morning, for example, but also throughout the day, having a very specific atmosphere of thought. That is, to serve as a floor or a platform, as well as an umbrella, and even a 360-degree protection. When the Bible refers to praying without ceasing, it could very well be that this is the type of prayer to which it refers. Certainly, the belief of mortal mind is in the atmosphere all the time. So we certainly need to be guarding our thought consistently and without interruption. If one attends church, whether it is Wednesday or Sunday or both, that still is only a very minuscule amount of time compared to the number of minutes in the day or the week. There's 1,440 minutes in a day. So if we isolate 60 minutes to attend church, that doesn't cut it. Even if church were every day. Mary Baker Eddy in the manual gives us very specific statements which are intended to be for daily study. Her household were given 39 topics, and they were expected to study those on a daily basis, and I believe it was intended to be at the beginning of their day. Mary Baker Eddy also gives us the diapason of heaven, and each one are for a specific synonymous term for God, with 7 being a total. Those are short phrases which she says should be stated often. Mary Baker Eddy also indicates it's very important for us to form models in thought and hold them in thought continuously. She notes that we are constantly barraged with temptations of mortal mind. And Mr. Winslow makes a very good statement about that. He says, think about yourself being in a room with a telephone that is constantly ringing and a radio that is tuned into station KOG that is continuously announcing thoughts about God. He says it's very important not to pick up the phone. It's like letting a salesman get his foot in the door so you can't close it. You know, he knocks on the door or rings a bell or something and you open it to see who it is. And then he puts his foot in the door. These are aggressive ones. And once they get their foot in the door, their goal is to get all the way in so they can make their presentation and hopefully on their part a sale. It may or may not be something that we're interested in, but they appear to have a goal, and unfortunately, they're not always thinking about the golden rule. I watched a comedy one time, and the comedian was providing a presentation of a monologue, and he was making jokes about food. And he was giving examples of how long you would need to exercise, and he was using running as an example. So how much time you would need to spend running in order to run off the excess fat or sugar or whatever was in these certain foods. And he made a joke about a particular fast food chain that was serving various things such as French fries, and he'd say how long it would take of exercising or running to run the excess grease off. And he talked about desserts, about running off the excess sugar and so forth. And he'd say, well, you're going to have to run for, you know, 15 minutes or an hour for this or 2 hours for that or whatever. And then he got to their special oversized hamburger. It had all the goodies on it to make it tasty. And he said, if you eat one of those suckers, you're going to have to run all day long. Well, if we are barraged with mortal mind suggestions all day long, we're going to need to protect our thought all day long. We're going to be needing to repeat those diapasons of heaven that Mary Baker Eddy provides us. And they're short. Some of them are only 2 or 3, 4 words long. But they're very succinct, to the point. And as noted, she says, we need to repeat them often. I don't believe I mentioned the Gilbert Carpenter yet, but he was Mary Baker Eddy's secretary part-time for 1 or 2 years, something like that. And he wrote a book called 500 Watching Points. And he worked on that for like 13 years. It indicates in the title pages that it was written between 1929 and 1942. That was a revelation or inspiration or unfoldment that took a period of around 13 or 14 years, depending on what month in the beginning and what month in the end that it happened to be. In the menu, there is a link that goes to the Mary Baker Eddy Index, and it has 10 different categories, and one of them is entitled Daily Study. That includes the 39 topics referred to previously in this recording. And if one did a serious study of that on a daily basis, I believe they would find some major transformations taking place in their life. As noted, she required her students that were living in her home to study that on a daily basis. She made the statement that she did not want anyone living in her home that could not handle the belief of electricity and the weather. Probably very few who consider themselves Christian Scientists have any concept of what she's referring to and the importance thereof. She makes the statement that even though electricity is still matter, she says it is the most ethereal part of matter. In other words, its characteristics are almost totally invisible and difficult to detect its characteristics. Mr. Rawson makes the emphatic statement that all of planet Earth is an electromagnetic field. And of course, this is what quantum physics or quantum mechanics, two different names for the same concept, was discovering around 1900. They came to the conclusion that as they kept splitting the atom, they discovered there was nothing there but consciousness. And it was the observers who were creating their own concept of what it was. There was an experiment done one time about sound, and the scientists set up a series of recording instruments and video cameras in a woods. And I believe that they said that if it's true that what we see is a projection of our own thought, and what we hear is also up to individual interpretation, let's see what happens if there's no one there to see or listen when something takes place, such as a tree falling. So they set up this elaborate system of monitoring what was going on in this area of the woods. And sure enough, eventually, a tree fell. Now, there were no humans around, so the recordings and the monitoring, the video and so forth, was unattended, and no human eyes or ears were available and specifically excluded from being able to enter the area. And they discovered that there was no sound from a big falling tree. There was another experiment done about light. And there were a series of sealed boxes. It's been a long time since I've read about this, so I don't remember all the details. But basically, the light went in one end of this series of boxes. And by the way, there was a hole in a vertical plate that separated the boxes. So they projected a light into one end of the series of boxes. They had a way to monitor the light that was inside each box, although it could not be seen from the outside because it was sealed and it was opaque. And they passed the light through from one box to the end series, and light went in and light came out, but the monitoring of the light indicated there was no light anywhere to be seen in any of the boxes in the series. So the light going in was seen, and the light coming out, the last box, was seen. But there was no light that could be recorded in their monitoring devices by the light as it passed through each of the cubicles. Another example that if there's no one there to see it, it didn't happen. I really would like to be able to provide the documentation on both of these that were reiterated, and I really do strive to be organized and title things so that I can find them. But these were a long time ago, and it's probably on some archive hard drive that I have, but I can't put my hands on it at the moment. And if I do, I will supplement this with the documentation so you can read it directly. I've even gone on the internet with various search terms trying to locate scientific articles about these two subjects. In fact, trying to find the example of these two things themselves. But I've been unsuccessful as of now. But it does all agree with what Mary Baker Eddy tells us. The three quotes at the beginning of Science and Health also give us some clues from three different sources. These are really the introduction to the entire textbook. The first one is a quote by Christ Jesus, who made it and was recorded by John in chapter 8, John of the Gospels, not the 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John. And it says, "Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." And the second one is by Shakespeare, who says, "There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so." And the third one is by Mary Baker Eddy, and it says, "Oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. This is thy high behest, thou here and everywhere." Mr. Rawson was one of the most successful practitioners of all time, and he emphasized how important it was for us to have our thought in the right place. Solomon stated, "Seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you." Christ Jesus said that what we think is the same as doing it. There's probably not a single person that doesn't have their closet full of skeletons. So if we converted everything that we ever thought that was off color, ungodlike in any way, then we're in big trouble. It's the same as doing what we were thinking. And we must remember that there is an absolute fixed line between truth and error, matter and spirit, love and hate, principle and chaos, intelligence and ignorance. You can come up with hundreds of examples. So if there is one element that is not love, then it's hate. There's no transition because there's no mixture of good and evil. There's no mixture of white and black. It's either white or it's black. Now, if it's gray, that's a different color. That's not white or black. It is gray. So it's either gray or it's not gray. The sun is either visible or it's not visible. If it is partly cloudy, then that is a different defined word, a different term. Is it raining or not raining? There are words that describe the in-between, but they're not the absolute terms. We know that mathematics operates by a system and a structure. It has the 10 digits of 0 through 9. It has the four operators of add, subtract, multiply, and divide. Music is the same way. You cannot play an A and a B together and have concord. It is discord. So, what about Christian Science? What about divine metaphysics? Mary Baker Eddy says this, and it's on page 146 of the textbook, Science and Health with the Key to the Scriptures, and it's at the top of every single page on our massive website of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pages. it says, divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system, to a form comprehensible by and adapted to the thought of the age in which we live. This system enables the learner to demonstrate the divine principle upon which Jesus's healing was based, and the sacred rules for its present application to the cure of disease. Disease, I'm sure, is determined to mean anything that is not total, perfect spiritual harmony. Any disease whatsoever. Remember, we cannot mix matter and spirit. Matter being the belief of what we see, feel, touch, smell, hear, and so forth. And spirit being that which is invisible, but is the only real substance. In other words, all existence is composed of spirit. Forget what the belief is that everyone thinks that it's matter. The advanced scientists in the physical sciences of physics and astronomy and so forth have recognized that there is a power beyond anything that can be explained by the physical sciences. Einstein stated he would love to ride a beam of light throughout space. The genius that was mentioned to you, named Frederick L. Rosson, said that the material world is a movie. He said we can determine what part of the movie we want to be focusing on. And of course, today with the advent of quantum computers that are supposed to be able to calculate at the speed of light, supposedly give us the opportunity to do time travel. And of course, if Mr. Rosson is correct in that the movie is already done, and we can view any part of it that we want to, we could go back in time or forward in time. And he points out that the only way we can change what is already in that material belief of a movie is to use the divine metaphysics that was provided to us by Mary Baker Eddy and demonstrate the reality of spirit, and therefore we can short circuit what is the belief of matter. He measured the electrical charges in the body, and he proved that there are negative charges that bring about or result in a problem, a physical problem. And if those charges are shorted out, then the problem disappears. In fact, that's what these med beds are all about, but that is the physical approach to it, as opposed to what Mary Baker Eddy gave us, which is the spiritual approach, which is the permanent solution. Self-will can bring about a temporary healing, but it's not a permanent healing. The spiritual approach solves the problem forever. A true spiritual healing can never reoccur. And of course, as has been stated in these recordings, we must protect every healing that we experience. And I gave examples on exactly how to do that. There is a lot to consider when we rise in the morning for the day, if that's what our time schedule is, to get up in the morning. Maybe we work all night and get up in the afternoon. But we need to protect ourselves, and we need to have a conviction of how we're going to handle whatever comes our way. Murray Baker Eddy states in a letter to a student on vision, she says, "Can you focus no matter what comes your way?" And of course, she obviously meant, can we focus on the spirit no matter what temptation of mortal mind tries to pop up and get us off track? And as stated in many other recordings, when she had some 2,000 students visiting her in Concord, New Hampshire at her home called Pleasant View, she told her right-hand gal, Laura Sargent, she said, as I look out, and she was up on a balcony looking out over everyone, that's where she spoke from when she gave a little talk. And she said, "Laura, I don't see a single Christian Scientist out in this crowd." She was so spiritually tuned in that she could sense what people were thinking. And in this case, she could sense that there wasn't the harmony and the peace and the confidence in God that she wanted to see as she looked out over the whole crowd. We need to be like a lighthouse. A lighthouse has one purpose: to shine the light, a protection that could never fail without bringing the risk of great harm to everyone that approached it. Do we want to be a lighthouse where our light is out, or where our light is shining brightly? As was given in these examples, we can't depend on matter. Spirit is the only reliable source of substance that is eternal and without any possibility of dimming. If it's true spirit, it is permanent, ever glowing, ever shining, ever enlightening. I look back on my life in our family, and all of us were Christian Scientists from birth, us children, four of us. And our parents had met each other when they were in their 20s, and it was at a Christian Science event. They called it the Concord Club back in those days. And they had both come from families where there was a life-threatening experience that had been healed. And that's why they were raised as Christian Scientists. So we four children had a rare upbringing that most children didn't have the benefit of, because there was protection going on all the time by at least my mother. Dad was in business and had some trucks and groups of men working for him. So he was busy in that endeavor during the day. But I believe my mother is probably the one that took the responsibility of protecting the family. I regret that I never had this conversation with my mother before she left us, but I can tell you that there was protection being done. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't be here today. My dad had a very busy schedule, and to operate his business, he needed to have appointments that were as far as 30 or 40 or even an hour in time, travel time, apart from each other. So he always had a fast car, and he drove without wasting any time. He invested in making the engine much more high performance than what it was out of the factory. So, him being my model, I did the same thing. So I took risks without the wisdom that he had. I had a motorcycle at the age of 14 and a car as soon as I turned 16, which was when you could get a driver's license for a car. And I had vehicles that would, both motorcycle and cars, that would go 200 miles an hour. One day my car wasn't operating properly when I was a senior in high school, and so Dad let me take his brand new Lincoln, which at that time was the largest engine on the market, and it would go 120 miles an hour. I had a woodworking class, which was my choice as a fun class my senior year. Myself and three others in the class needed to get some materials from a nearby town. It was about, maybe 5 miles away. And they had just completed a four-lane divided highway from town south of where we were going up to the capital, which was about 30 miles north. And I believe the highway went all the way to the most southern tip of the state, to the center, at least, which is where the capital was. So here I was in a brand new car with supposedly one of the fastest engines. And being the risk taker that I was, after we went to town and got all the materials we needed, and we're heading back to school, my three companions, classmates, and I were in the car, and it started to just rain very lightly. And I took the car up to the full speed of 122 miles an hour. And everything was fine in our blind eyes, or I should say in my blind eyes, until we started doing 360s. In other words, the car had hit some kind of a slick spot because there hadn't been rain for a while and there was oil on the roads from the cars. And we went around 360 degrees 2.5 times and ended up on the side of the road facing in the direction from which we came. I looked over at my classmates, and in the back seat, and they no longer thought it was a lot of fun because they were scared totally. One of them was supposed to be the toughest kid in the whole school, and his face was white. Being oblivious to danger, I had no problem. I said, well, let's go back to school. I started the engine and pulled out on the highway and got it turned around going in the right direction. There wasn't a scratch on the car. No one was injured. And I am absolutely certain that it was because of protection that was being done, probably from the moment I left home. I had a similar experience with a motorcycle a couple of years before that, and I was, as I mentioned, 14 years old, and you could get a license. And a friend of mine that had also a motorcycle, we were riding through the town that I mentioned. It was 3-4 miles away, 5 miles away. And we went up over this hill, and at the very top, I'd never been on the road before, and at the very top of the hill, it came to a T. And again, it was a slight rain. We slammed our brakes on. My motorcycle fell over on the side. We had crash bars built on them, which were bars that extended out to cover our legs and the handlebars and everything. And thank goodness, because we both got up, didn't have a scratch on ourselves. And I remember that when I got to the top of the hill and slammed on the brakes, there were cars going both ways on the road that was perpendicular to the one we were, where the road ended. So we really slid between traffic going both ways. I don't know why I never mentioned this to my parents, either one of these incidences. Well, probably to prevent the likely discipline that would follow. But I had a life with a lot of action in it. And never once ended up with a scratch. One time, I was riding a scooter. I was living in a motorhome touring the U.S. And I had a scooter on the back of the motorhome so I could move around when I parked into a motorhome facility. And here, I was totally innocent, because there was a town that was about 20 or 30 miles away, and we were parked in a small area out in the desert. But it's where people came during that time of the year, because the weather was absolutely ideal. But when we wanted any kind of entertainment, we would go to the big city. It was on the Colorado River. Beautiful drive. And I was going absolutely the speed limit or even a little under. It was just a leisurely drive. I think I was going around 50 miles an hour, and I think it was a 55 or 65 mile an hour speed limit. So I was totally innocent. One of the few times. And the rear wheel locked up on the motor scooter. And very quickly, the rear end came up to meet the front, and the motor scooter flipped over. I had no helmet on, because it was a state that did not require a helmet, and it was very hot weather, probably 120 degrees. So one of the most beautiful things to do was to take a ride at night or late afternoon when it was still light. And, of course, wearing a helmet is very hot. And apparently, involuntarily, the thought came to tuck my head in. And when I hit the pavement, I was apparently just rolling. I got up and walked away. The motor scooter had been demolished. You know, they make them primarily out of plastic. So I caught a ride back to where my motorhome was and had the motor scooter picked up and trashed. As of that time, which was many years ago, I had not really driven over the speed limit for a very long time, many years, and had not had a driving ticket for probably at least 20 years. And I'd become a law-abiding citizen in terms of driving. So I was truly innocent in that case. But I was studying very seriously every day, several hours a day, creating all kinds of diagrams, trying to connect things together that made sense to me. And I was really seriously pursuing spiritual advancement. And I'm sure the fact that I was innocent and that I really was genuinely pursuing spiritual advancement and really striving to be a good representative of a disciple of God and Christ Jesus and Mary Baker Eddy, the system of divine metaphysics and so forth, that all had a part in this last experience. So I was going around, I would say, 50 miles an hour. In fact, I passed a policeman shortly before this incident happened. He was going in the opposite direction. You know, and they have radar on their cars. And the same policeman came back where the accident was, and he verified that, yeah, he passed me, and I was driving very carefully and under the speed limit, and he could see no problem and no reason to cite me for any violation. The one statement I can say is that even though I was very foolish for much of my young years of life, doing the kinds of things that I mentioned here, and I had also been flying airplanes, but there was no risk taken in an airplane. I can guarantee you, it was strictly by the rules. That included jets as well as propeller planes. But that was serious business. When I was on the ground in either a two or four-wheel or even a two, three or four-wheel vehicle, it was not according to principle. But somehow I escaped every problem. Had very few tickets, probably three or four tickets in 20 years of driving that way. And I'm not saying that to be proud, but the other way around. Somehow, my foolishness had been neutralized, and I never received a penalty. But as I said, the last incident, I'd been driving according to the law, in terms of speed limits. Of course, I never did violate any other rules, like running a traffic light or that kind of thing. I never did that kind of thing at all. And it was really only out in the country when the road was good and there were not other people around that I was doing those other kinds of things. That doesn't mean it was according to the law, but it was being in consideration of any other people, and I rarely had anyone in the car with me, maybe once or twice. I'm not sure. I don't remember whether I ever had anyone with me when I was driving at high speed. Probably not. But this does not mean that this is the way we should conduct ourselves. I'm only trying to bring out the point that if we are a sincere student and we have embedded in our thought the principles about God and man and the relationship between God and man, that we're going to receive benefits that we may not even appreciate until later. Just like the 100 pages of testimonies of healing in the last chapter of Science and Health, where an individual may be working on a particular problem, and because they were aligning themselves with truth, which is really the healer of all ills, that their whole experience comes into alignment with truth. So they're healed of things that they weren't even thinking about, but they had been aware that they had a problem. But they weren't focusing on it or really thinking about it when they were studying to maybe solve what was the focus that they were trying to heal. So we are benefited in ways that we don't even realize at the time, probably. It's mentioned that people have healing in their vision and that they automatically just stop picking up their glasses if they wore glasses or didn't put in their contact lenses if that's what they were using. But they just went about their business and didn't realize until later that they were no longer utilizing the assistance that they were receiving from some kind of a physical aid, such as glasses or contact lenses. The one thing that one can be assured of, that is, if they really genuinely pursue the study of the system of divine metaphysics, as Mary Baker Eddy refers to it on page 146 of Science and Health, whereby she says, divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system, to a form comprehensible by and adapted to the thought of the age in which we live. This system enables the learner to demonstrate the divine principle upon which Jesus' healing was based and the sacred rules for its present application to the cure of disease. So that's how I believe we can best use our time, is to study what this system is all about, because it's just like mathematics. We wouldn't know how to do a multiplication or a division or any other application in mathematics and get the same result as someone else on the other side of the world with a different skin color, different profession, different education, different upbringing, whatever. We all come up with the same answer utilizing mathematics or the same thing in music or chemistry or any topic you can think of, because there is a system and a structure, which is principle, that has been discovered and proven to be true. And if we follow that, we will get a consistent answer like anyone else. No matter who they are or where they are or what the circumstances are, we will get the same answer. 7 times 8 is always 56. Doesn't matter who does it or what the objects are that they refer to. It's always the same answer because there is a system and a structure in mathematics. If someone plays an A and a C in music together, it's always going to be harmonious because that is a harmony of two notes. If they play A and B together, it's discord. It's noise. Doesn't matter who you are. Doesn't matter what the weather is outside or what instrument you're playing or anything else. It's going to be discord. If we learn the system of divine metaphysics, it's always going to give us the result of healing. If we are persistent and we continue to cultivate our understanding of the 7 synonymous terms of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, and the 4 operators of the Word, Christ, Christianity, and Science, and we get an understanding of the levels, which are on page 115 and 116 of Science and Health. Three of them, which are Mortal Mind, the translation of Mortal Mind, and the highest one, which is a translation of Immortal Mind. We're always going to get the same answer. And why Christian Scientists don't understand that there is a system, and why they don't read that sentence on page 146 is beyond me. Although I did the same thing for much of my adult life. It was only about, 20 years ago that I became aware of it. And also the manual. People don't read the manual of the Mother Church, where it says that Mary Baker Eddy must personally sign certain things in order for them to be effective. She designed the manual to be a self-destructing bureaucracy on the entire movement of Christian Science, whereby the branches would not be under the auspices of any controlling body, such as a church in Boston, or any controlling people, such as the board of directors, but that it would be self-destructive, because she set it up as a temporary means to get people started on the right track. And she specifically says, if you're a branch church, you must have your own set of bylaws. They're not the bylaws in the manual, because the manual on the title says the manual of the First Church of Christ Scientists in Boston, Massachusetts, period. It is the manual for that one structure, one location. And much of what is in the manual is a manual just for that location, that one church. It is a branch church. You know, there's a First Church, a Second Church, Third Church. They're all branch churches of the science of divine metaphysics. So that is what is constant. That is what is constant, that they are all based on the writings of Mary Baker Eddy. Bureaucracy, not on your life. Bureaucracy has nothing to do. In fact, the first church that Mary Baker Eddy had, there was no manual, no bureaucracy. And then she shut it down because she said there's not even a need for a church. And then a few years later, everybody was hounding her and say, we have to have a church. And she didn't want to start it, but because of popular demand, she did it, knowing that it would only be a temporary facility, a temporary bureaucracy to get people started. Are there any churches on chemistry? Are there any churches on mathematics? Are there any churches on music? There's schools that you go to learn about it. There are classes in schools that you learn about it. But there's no bureaucracy that controls it. And she did not intend for a bureaucracy to control what she discovered is the most important discovery of all time for humanity. And that is reinstating the lost element of healing that Jesus lived and practiced. We had dark ages starting in about 325 AD when they had a council of NICAEA, which is NICAEA. And that is when they combined church and state. The government and the church were combined. And of course, one of the primary features of America is that there was to be a separation of church and state, because the people that came here from the UK and France and so forth and Spain, they knew that was one of the biggest fallacies of the governments where they were. The government controlled the churches, and they wanted to make sure that wasn't the case in America. Well, unfortunately, it didn't take long before they started having 501(c) corporations, which means that it had to be approved by the federal government. And now they totally control anyone that has a 501(c) organization. That's why we at Mary Baker Eddy Institute, even though it was started as a 501(c) organization by the founders of Helen Wright and her husband, and it was since 1988 until about a year or two ago, so we're talking like over 30 years, we made the decision to no longer be a 501(c) organization, but to be a totally independent organization and not under the control of a federal government. So, in our daily prayer, we should pray for everyone that is in Christian Science as a group, impersonally. Mary Baker Eddy prayed for the whole world. She prayed for the nation of America and other nations. She mentions about when there was a war between Japan and I forget who the other one was, whether it was China or whoever. And the period of time that Mary Baker Eddy was here, we didn't have the continuous wars that we had before and after. We had a civil war, and that was promulgated by one of the nations that wanted to break us up from Europe. And it was instigated by them for the very purpose of biting the North from the South, hoping that we would divide up and never be united again. Well, they were wrong. We ended up being united and coming up to 50 states united under one constitution and one government. Unfortunately, back in 1871, they ruined the Constitution by replacing the original one that we had in 1789. So the Constitution that we are under now, illegally, is not the Constitution under which America was founded. I remember our recent president, who is legally still the president because the last election was illegal, but in any event, he mentioned to the White Hat military that we needed to get rid of the Constitution. And they were fooled. They were fooled by the mainstream media, who doesn't say anything about the fact that the Constitution was changed about 100 years after the original one was put into force. I guess it was 80 years, 1789 to 1871. So, yeah. And they said, wow, what are you talking about? And they didn't know because they hadn't studied history. Do we have freedom? No. Try to get a new patent approved that is for the blessing of mankind. We could have free energy for everything, everyone, free. Tesla proved that in about 1900, Nikola Tesla. He was friends with the brother, or no, uncle, of our most recent real president. And when he passed on, his uncle got all of the papers from Nikola Tesla. And when his uncle passed on, they all passed down to our recent president. He knows what the inventions were. He's very familiar with all the large number of patents that have been submitted, never approved, because they would all be putting out of business corrupt corporations. Do we have anything to pray for about America? I realize I'm talking to an international audience, but it's the same for every country. Hungary is trying to break out of the EU because they know the EU is corrupt. Other countries are doing the same thing. They're finally waking up to the fact that they shouldn't be spending money on a war to support a money laundering operation in the country that is trying to fight a good country. In fact, if you want to start a new Christian church, the easiest place to do it is in that country that everybody thinks is bad. That's why they think it's bad, because they are establishing new Christian churches. Unity. And they're not putting up with what the EU is trying to do, to destroy everything and control everything, along with our dear country of America. Look at the border. Anyone that wants to just comes right in. They give them money when they get here. They give them a hotel to live in. They give them a debit card that they fund every month. They just fill it up and you can live free. All on our tax dollars. Mary Baker Eddy knew that a bureaucracy always cultivates corruption. There shouldn't be any bureaucracy that is controlling any idea. That includes Christianity, math, music, chemistry, physics, homeschooling, education in any form, medicine, law. It should all be controlled by the population, the people. The people's court should be the only court there is. Any kind of medicine or alternative to medicine that you want to bring to market, you should be able to do it. And let the market decide what their benefits are. But the medical profession controls so much in the lives of so many people. Many of the people that were responsible for this pandemic have been sent to a military tribunal and have been terminated because of their corruption, their treason against America. People usually don't know about it because they're not following the right sources. But there is a tremendous amount of swamp draining that has been taking place. And this is because of the prayers of many people, even though they don't have the same concept of God that a Christian Scientist has, where we believe that God is mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, and they think God is Jesus. Well, that's for their own salvation to work out. Sooner or later, they will waken up. That's not our job to waken them up. They have to waken up at their own speed, and they have to find out for themselves. You cannot teach adults the formative years of how the mind operates was done in their early years of youth. We can offer information to the receptive thought, but they have to make their own decision on what they accept. And they will forget everything that they don't practice, because that's the way the brain works. It remembers what it is doing, what it practices doing. I remember taking an advanced class in a particular topic, and the professor says, okay, now how many of you guys are doing what I am informing you about? He says, that's what I want to know. He says, I can talk to them blue in the face, but if you guys are not out there doing it on your own, making it your own, you'll forget about it. I'm giving you real pearls of wisdom. And he was. I mean, he was really sharp as a tack. But most of the people in the class did not follow him. There's a few of us that did, and it worked out really well because he was speaking from wisdom. He was teaching because he wanted to teach. He had been out in the world, and he knew how it worked in this particular topic, and he was sharing his wisdom. I don't know, he may not even been taking a salary from the university. It wouldn't surprise me if he didn't. You know, our most recent president didn't take a penny in salary. So for 4 years, he donated, almost $2 million to charities from his salary. He gave the whole thing away, never took a dime. He didn't need to, of course, because he's a wealthy man on his own right, because he worked hard for many years and built up an international business as one of the most recognized names in the entire universe of business. But we all have the same opportunity in America, supposedly, if the government would keep their fingers out of the pie. So we need to be praying for America, for these kinds of things I'm talking about. We need to be praying for the whole world. We need to be praying for peace, knowing that everyone has the opportunity to recognize the principle of God. I could make this a multi-hour treatment, but I know probably no one would would listen to it all, because the attention span is around an hour or so. In a movie, they always cut them off about an hour and a half, 90 minutes, because that's the attention span. When they have a longer one, like one of the actors came out with one that was like 3 hours long, you know, they presented it in two parts. He took about a 15 or 20 minute or 30 minute break between part one and part two. Everybody was going to get the popcorn and, and everything. I watched it. I was there. And that's the idea. So we need to be aware of what Mary Baker Eddy really gave us in that sentence on page 146 that I read to you. And what is she saying in the manual? What is she saying in chapter 14, which is a summary of 1 through 13? What is she saying in the glossary, which is a very, very critical thing? What is she saying in chapter 15, which of course is part of the key to the scriptures, because that's where she explains the entire topic of creation. And 16 is what was dictated to John by Jesus, who came back in the flesh and met with John on the island of Patmos, which is explained in detail with backup references from the Bible by Dr. Robert C. Putnam. He was a chemist, and he wrote that wonderful book on 10 Bible lessons in 169 pages, and it covers everything you need to know about the Bible, Old and New Testament. It would be several thousand pages, I don't know, maybe even 10,000 pages of a book. It'd have to be like a big encyclopedia or the OED dictionary that's in 20 volumes, because it is so comprehensive. But what he does is he gives you references, and then it's up to you to read the reference, and they're all from the Bible. It's up to you to read the reference that backs up what his summary is, because the 169 pages is basically a summary of the entire Bible. And there's a chapter on Mary Baker Eddy, chapter 10. Chapter 9 is on just Christ Jesus. And chapter 1 through 8 is on the Old Testament. I searched for years to try to find something that would do what he did in 169 pages. It is genius work that he did. He taught Sunday school for over 30 years. And he was a real researcher. Like I said, he was a chemist. And he practiced that in his analysis of Christian Science and the Bible and Mary Baker Eddy's writings. And he gives it to us in 169 pages. What a wonderful treasure, a pearl of great price that he gave us. So we've got our work cut out. God gives us the chalk and the chalkboard, as was mentioned in a prior treatment, MP3. We've got the chalk and the chalkboard. We've got all the references that you would need to advance as far as you want to go. And Mary Baker Eddy states that infinite progression is concrete being. So the only thing we can rely on, if we think about concrete being as being something that we can rely on, the only thing we can really rely on is making infinite progress. That's our concrete being. Infinite progress. And of course, that's obviously spiritual. We're not talking about money, houses, any other kind of asset. that is supposedly a visible form of success. We're talking about within consciousness. It's like the man that had three sons. And the man was mature and he had a beautiful home with a fantastic rare library and a large piece of land that was outside the home. And he said it was time for him to divide up his assets to his sons. Didn't want there to be any fight after he was gone. He wanted to get it taken care of now. So he gave them each an option of what they wanted. And they had to write it down so they wouldn't know what the other one wanted. No discussion about it. And then he opened up the three pieces of paper and read them one at a time. He was hoping there would be no conflict, but he didn't know. If there was, then he'd have to sell something that nobody wanted and divide up the piece of what more two or more wanted. So he opened up the first one, and the first guy said, "I'd like to have the land." He said, "Why, son?" And the son said, "Well, you know, we could have all kinds of problems out there. We could have a fire, we could have a storm, we could have a war, but the land is always going to be there." He said, "Well, that's good reasons." And he opens up the second piece of paper, and the guy wants the house. And he said, "Oh, well, this is a great house. I can have parties here. I always have a place to live. And I can always go get a job. And if I want to buy something else, I can eventually save up the money to do it. But I would be happy with the house." So there was no conflict with number one and number two. So he was eager to open up the third piece of paper. And believe it or not, it was the youngest son, and he wanted the library. He said, "Well, son, why did you choose that?" He said, "Well," he says, "I figure that no matter what happens, you know, we could have problems. You know, there could be another government come in here and confiscate the land." He says, "The house could burn down." He said, "But what I learned from the library, nobody can take away from me. And I'm going to start reading the books immediately. And every time I read something and learn it, I've got it." So each one of them had their own reasons, and the third one was probably the most intelligent, even though he was the youngest. Well, we've got to decide what we are looking for. Are we looking for learning about Christian Science, learning about the system of divine metaphysics, and no one can take it away from us? Are we striving for a big house or a big piece of land? Believe me, I've had both of those, and they don't give you anything. Anything. In fact, I mentioned the last one I lived in before I moved to where I was a motorhome, you know, touring around the U.S. And it was great. It was a great sense of freedom to get rid of material possessions and the maintenance and upkeep that they all take. People that get older come to a different perspective on life of what was important and what was not important in their life. And downsizing is very, very common and popular for people that have lived a life where they've been through these other things. And they really appreciate them more if they experienced it. John Morgan made a very, very important statement about the word. You know, I told you that the four, well, I don't know whether I mentioned it, but the four sides of the city, which is the operators, are the Word, Christ, Christianity, and Science. And in short, the Word means the facts about God. The Christ means to be able to handle anything that comes your way, to translate it in spiritual terms. And Christianity means demonstrating to overcome any problem that you're presented with. And science has two levels. The top level is God, which is what is described on page 115 of Science and Health. And the lowest level is Christian Science, which means that you're presented with a very onerous problem, and it's called depravity. And so you start at the bottom, and you work up through the other levels. That's why Mary Baker Eddy calls it three stages of translation of mortal mind. The bottom is Christian Science, depravity. And the top level is God, which is translation of immortal mind. So if we understand those, then we have a system. Well, I say understand, it's a, you know, infinite progression is concrete being. So, I mean, we just start. We make the decision to start. Like Richard Strain, he was having very difficult time. He's one of our authors on the website of mbeinstitute.org. And he was having a very difficult time, so he had a meeting with one of his friends who was an advanced Christian Scientist. And he said, "What do I do?" And happened to be a woman. She says, "How much time are you studying?" He says, "I don't have any time to study. I do this, that, and the other, and that's 18 hours. I got 6 hours left to sleep." She said, "Well, if you're not studying 5 hours a day, you're not going to make the progress that you need to make." He said, "Well, that'd only give me 1 hour to sleep." She didn't say a word. She had said her, she made her statement, just like Jesus and Mary Baker Eddy. You know, Jesus said, "Say yay, yay, nay, nay. Don't get into arguments." Mary Baker Eddy was accused of being prayerless. She didn't argue with the publication that said she was prayerless. She just put out another statement that said the truth. She said she prays 3 times a day for the good of all humanity. And she faces towards the New Jerusalem. And she prays for life, truth, and love to be established in everyone, that their ills shall be removed. You know, she made a very simple statement. And that's what this lady did to Richard Strain. And so he said, "Well, okay, looks like I don't have any choice. I'm going to do it." So he did it. And by the end of the week, which was only 4 or 5 days away, he said things started to already change. And he ended up being so married to the idea of studying 5 hours a day that he ended up being invited to various churches to give talks. Now, I'm not recommending what he did or anything else, but that's just an experience that we're repeating for the benefit of anyone who thinks that they're really stretching themselves. Mary Baker Eddy said that everyone, and she's talking about herself, everyone can do more than they do. It's hard to imagine how anybody can do more than what Mary Baker Eddy was doing, but that's what she said. Everyone can do more than they do. So where does that put us? Look in the mirror. Okay, I'm going to wrap this up. We've got to remember that we need to seal every treatment with and make it your own. Don't just repeat the words I say or someone else says. But if you look at the definition of mind, you know that it includes all creative ability, all capacity, all functionality, all creativity. I already mentioned that. But all capacity, all facility, all functionality, all action, all intelligence, wisdom, and knowing. And if you put that together, you're going to have performance. And if you measure the performance, it's going to be measured as power, like a horsepower on a car engine or any kind of an engine, motorcycle, jet engine, or whatever. It's power. Power is a measurement of performance, and it's usually related to time, maybe to altitude in the case of an airplane. So we need to say something like that, that all the truth in this treatment is effective because God is all of these things. God is also the only substance, which is spirit. God is the only soul, which is spiritual senses. God is the only principle, which is all system and structure. God is the only life, which is practicing what God is all about and what man is in their relationship. God is the only truth. Truth is like the rule, the path to God in our understanding and also our motive. And God is love, as it says in John. God is love. Love is completeness, wholeness, nurturing all of the qualities until we get to a stage of completeness. That's what love is. And they all mix. In other words, you have to use intelligence when you are administering love. Mary Baker Eddy says she makes strong demands on love. It's not a wishy-washy love. It's a disciplined love. You can't let your child run across the street without holding his hand because he doesn't know the danger. The cars that are coming, he's totally oblivious. If he's playing a game and the ball runs out in the street, you know, he might go running after it. So those who are dependent upon you, you obviously have to protect them until they are capable of protecting themselves. Well, that's what the discipline is of Christian Science, the discipline of love, the discipline of all these things. And we're never able to take care of ourselves because our self is normally considered a human that is made up of brain, blood, bones, and other material elements. What can really take care of us is one thing and one thing only, and that is God, which is a three-letter word that describes all of these kinds of things we've been talking about in this treatment. So we have to know that the truth in this treatment cannot be diluted, it can't be diverted, it can't be deflected, there can't be any interference, it can't be stopped, and it can't be reversed. Because God is the only thing that is power. God is the only thing that is substance, spirit. Nothing can interfere with the omnipotence, omniscience, and omnipresence, and omniaction of God. It says in the glossary, good. Definition of good is God, spirit, omnipotence, omnipresence, which is wisdom, knowing, and intelligence. Omnipresence, which means it's within our own consciousness, and omniaction, which is the only action. If we see an accident, we should say, the only action is the action of mind, controlled by principle, which is balance and harmony. Cannot be anything that is discord or chaos. And wrap it up by saying something like, God is all in all. All source, all manifestation, or God is, there is nothing but God. Nothing but God. Amen.